Now.
Okay. All right, I want to welcome everybody to the town council meeting, April 7th, 2022. We're glad everybody's here and sorry we're running a couple of minutes late, but we're on our way now. If everybody will stand and raise the flag and say the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. All right. First thing on the agenda tonight is we're going to approve the minutes for December 2021. February 2022 and March 2022. So let's take a look at December's first. Jimmy and Steve won't need to vote on this one. Luckily we got enough to make a majority. Has anybody got any problems with the December minutes?
I didn't see any.
I didn't either. I went over it a couple times. And Elizabeth, anything for you? All right, someone want to make the motion?
Oh, Gladys, make motion accepting minutes as presented for December 2nd, 21.
Okay, second. Steve, you want to second it? Oh, you can. Elizabeth?
I can second it.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye, Gladys.
Elizabeth, aye.
Judy, aye. Motion carried. All right, December minutes approved. All right, next, let's go to February 3rd minutes. Has anybody got any problems with February 3rd?
Yes, the fire department one.
Oh, the one with the booster?
Yep.
All right, Jimmy, it shows that we approved that. We talked about it. And incidentally, today I got the booster scheduled for the firehouse. So on that same note, okay? So anything else besides the one with the booster?
Nope.
All right, Jim, where was that on?
That's what I was just trying to
find. It's on the second page.
Okay.
It says Elizabeth Norris noted it's about the
right.
I got it halfway there. Down.
Halfway down.
Oh yeah, Jim said there needs a booster.
There needs to be a booster.
There needs to be a booster. So that's what we've got to change. So other than that change, you got that okay, Judy? Okay. And I will. Circle that right here. Okay, any other corrections or changes?
Nope.
I'll entertain a motion.
I'll second it.
Steve made
yeah, so we got to make a motion first.
Steve did.
Oh, did you? I didn't hear you. I apologize. Okay, all right. All right, all in favor?
Gladys, yes.
Steve, yes.
Jim, yes.
Judy,
Elizabeth, yes.
Cool. All right. February 3rd minutes are approved. March 3rd minutes. Anybody got any edits or changes to this? I didn't see any.
I'll make a motion. We accept them as presented.
Okay. Can I have a second?
A second.
All in favor?
Gladys, yes.
Steve, yes.
Elizabeth, yes.
That's right, you weren't, Jimmy. Judy, yes. Okay. Motion carried, 4-0. All right. Okay, that takes care of that. Jimmy and I went to Panguitch and met with the Garfield County Commission on our pagers, and they gave us how many, 14?
14.
14 brand new pagers they gave us.
$8,000 worth.
And then Corey had a grant for the radios.
When you buy the specialized fire license plates or your military plates or anything like that, but the firefighter plates, when you buy that sticker, that extra $15 actually goes into a grant fund. And at the end of the year, any of the chiefs want to apply for it can actually apply through for grant money out of that fire license plate fund. So Corey got us $5,000 out of a license plate fund to actually pay for our radios that we're getting. It's like $4,900 for the radios.
Okay. So pagers and radios are taken care of. That was so cool. He knew it all along, the little stinker ham. He had talked. I'm like, okay, am I going to have to negotiate? That was in my mind. Am I going to have to negotiate on this? They didn't think twice about it. It was really cool.
No, they told us that they were actually excited to have Boulder, somebody from Boulder, come over and get money.
They gave us brand new. Yeah. No, well, we've
so had. The pagers came from Danny Perkins. He had them sitting in his office over there. And we went to the county commissioners to actually ask for money for extrication equipment. They gave us $16,250 for brand new extrication equipment.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. That was actually what we went for. And then got blessed with the radios and the
pagers.
And the pagers. So.
First trip.
And then.
What was the total from the county commission?
$16,250. And that's just for the extrication.
Yeah, I forgot about that. I didn't put that down. I was so excited about the pagers and the radios, and that they didn't even think twice about it. So that was really good. All right. Next on the agenda is fire equipment. And I'll let Jimmy handle that because we've got the quotes.
Okay. Elizabeth, did you get a thing from Widner?
Fire? Yeah.
Okay. So we had a price to replace all the hose on our big truck, which is 1,500 feet of it. And that's our supply line. Then we also had him price the inch and a half attack line that's on our rail, because both of them, they both severely need to be replaced. The coupling is just so we can actually replace it ourselves or repair it ourselves. That way we don't have to send it in or have somebody come out and actually fix our hoses for us if we get a tear in it. We can cut our hose right off and put that. That's what that $600 coupling is.
Cool.
The booster hose, that's just an extra 100 feet of it. So we can actually tie into our tack line to give us extra 200 feet of it. The rescue bags, that's to carry all of our gear in. We have gear that is our heavyweight and our lightweight. We have bags for, well, Pete, I want to say over half of them maybe for the people for our heavyweight. And nobody has a bag for any of their lightweight stuff. So that's what that is for the to carry our equipment. The dual channel hose ramp, that is so we can actually, when we have a fire and we have to go across Highway 12, we can actually have it where you put it in there. It's two channel. You can throw your hoses inside there. It's got a cover that goes over the top of it. So cars, semis, anything that needs to, they can go right over the top of your hoses. So there's no more stopping traffic. And then the fire boots, 7 is the max. I think there's only 4 or 5 of us that don't have the newer boots. All of our other boots, we were looking, and I think 2 of our boots are stamped 1996 on the inside of the boots. And so that's just I don't think we're going to get 7 of them. I just told him 7 just so he could give us a good quote on it. And then the freight time. So this is actually when we're looking at everywhere else, just for the hoses through 2 or 3 different places, they wanted almost double what Wiedner does. And they're the same company that comes down and maintains our oxygen for our SCBA gear, everything like that. So they're not a bad company to go with. Plus, they're also the cheapest for any of our stuff that we need.
Have those other guys that you checked with, did you get quotes from them?
Yeah, and they were ridiculous quotes.
I know, but have you still got them?
No. It was $16,000.
It might be good to have, because dealing with this kind of money, this shows that this is the best deal out of all of them, you know, and that way we'd have the paper backup for it. So it might be smart to go there.
I'll see if I can get the, but yeah, it was, I think that for what they wanted for just the two sets of hose was almost $16,000, compared to $8,000 here.
Yeah. And we have the ARPA money to cover every bit of this. So
yes, we have the $14,000. The total for the quote on here is $13,991.
So we said emergency stuff was going to be important, and I think we're doing a good job with it. Anybody got any questions?
Hey, Peg, it's $16,250.
Thank you.
Jimmy, I have a question about the quote. I assume that obviously the freight is going to switch anyway based on when it actually gets purchased, but it is based on distance. And if you notice up at the top, and I assume it's a error from there, from the
middle. It is where the bill to and ship to?
Yeah, it's going to Boulder, Colorado.
I tried getting him to change that today and I didn't hear back from him. Just, freight is just because.
I mean, obviously that, I mean, it's going to be a necessary cost, but I just wanted to make sure that it was noticed.
Yes, I did notice that. I tried to get him to change it before I came and I didn't get an email back from him.
Right on.
Okay, any other questions? All right, I would like to entertain a motion to pass this so that we can get our fire hoses and everything ordered.
I'll make a motion.
I'll second it.
Okay, all in favor?
Gladys, yes.
Steve, yes.
Jim, yes.
Judy, yes.
Elizabeth, yes.
Okay, motion carried, 5-0.
Jimmy, thanks for all your work on that.
Yeah, no problem.
Good job. All right, next, the water study. Jimmy's got a lot tonight.
Right.
Boulder Farmstead Water
Company. All right. So it starts on like the third page in, which is actually page one.
Actually, real quick, Jimmy, as you do that, in addition to thanking you, I think it's important that we recognize, you know, whether it's Corey and other people in the fire department, but that they're all volunteer positions and then taking extra time to apply for the grant and get the grant and so forth from the license plates. And to make sure that people really recognize and thank Corey and other people that participated in that.
Corey's a huge help for our fire department.
So I just want people to.
Fire hose.
Yeah. I mean, all of that, I know Corey was a big part of and other people. So, and you all have had a busy season and it's a hard time, and then you've been getting together and doing quite a few meetings lately, so just wanted to say thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, the introduction. Utah set a statewide water conservation goal from 2000 to 2025 of 25% across the state. Progress has been made to meet the goal. Recently, the Division of Water Resources has established regional conservation goals that reflect local conditions such as climate, population, and different water uses. Utah Regional Municipal and Industrial Water Conservation Goals for Garfield County is 19% from 2015 to 2030, which equivalents to about 231 gallons per capita per day. You're gonna see that GPCD a ton in this study. So providing an adequate supply of culinary water to the town of Boulder, Utah's primary concern for the Boulder Farmstead Water Company, water conservation practices are vital to ensuring the company is able to provide the much needed culinary water to users on the system while also maintaining high water quality. The water conservation plan is being implemented to help ensure that these needs are addressed and provided for by the company. So system profile. The company was incorporated in June 20th, 1953. It provides culinary water to customers within its service area, which includes residents and businesses within the corporate boundaries of Boulder Town and nearby. Boulder Town is located in central Garfield County. The town is 29 miles northeast of Escalante, Utah, and high on State Route 12. Boulder area residents who are not within the serviceable area of the water company obtain culinary water by means of private shallow wells. For the purpose of this plan, the company's service area has been divided into three sub-areas. Service one, extending from the existing 600,000-gallon tank battery located near the cemetery southward to the lowest extent of the service area. The largest number of connections and the greatest demands are located in Service Area 1. Service Area 1 is also an area that is likely to be experiencing the greatest development and by population growth. All existing commercial connections are located in this area. Improvements to this area included a replacement well in 2021 and an additional storage tank 2020 to help meet future demands. Service Area 2 comprises the central service area that extends southward from the existing Jepson Springs source down to the existing 600,000 gallon tank. This area has few existing connections and development potential is limited. Service Area 3, it is the highest elevation and northmost portion of the service area, beginning at the existing 250,000 gallon tank just north of the Boulder Town boundary and extending southward down to the existing Jepson Spring area. This includes the Boulder King Ranch Estate subdivision with the potential for 54 developed lots over the next 20 years. The improvements include new wells, storage, and distribution piping were all constructed in Service Area 3 in 2012, eliminating the deficiencies in this service area. Is everybody clear on where the service area is? Yes.
Yeah.
Water connections. So if you look at the Boulder Town population projection on page 3, so 1980, we had 150 people. 2020, we had 245. What they're expecting for Boulder to have, and this is just off the growth rate that they've studied from 1980, you're going to have 612 people in Boulder by 2060. The future improvements of this to the water system to increase capacity will be necessary to ensure that an adequate supply of culinary water is provided to the citizens of the community. Currently, the company serves 190 residential connections, 9 commercial connections, 2 industrial connections, and 7 institutional connections. Table 1 below displays the current connections to the system and a 20-year projection of connections through each of the service sub-areas. Do I need to go over those or are we good?
Yeah, we're good.
Okay. Awesome. To project future water demands, it was assumed that the system's ERCs would grow at the same rate as the population, 1.67%. This assumes that the residential, institutional, and commercial connections would grow proportionally. Figure 3 shows existing and projected numbers of ERCs through 2040. So we're supposed to have 462 connections by the year 2060. Right now, yeah, we're looking at, 241, I think we have, something like that. The company uses water produced by Jepson Spring and 3 underground wells. Water rights associated with these sources are shown in the tables below. So now on the table below right there, so why it shows 2 different times is because we've actually went back in and actually asked for more water and got more water rights. So that's why there's different water rights numbers. The 97-68 is for the Jepson Spring, and then the 97-158 is for the well. And then when we came back in, because you can't use your same water right numbers on there, that's where the 97-2220 for the Jepson Spring and well, that's when we came back in and asked for more water for them. That's the same as the two, those, because the two, the 2106 and the 2190 is the one well, and then the 2198 and the 2235 are one well.
Oh, I wondered what that was when I was reading that.
It's just us going back and asking for more water from the state. Mm-hmm. Boulder Farms said utilizes water from mainly Jepson Spring and uses water from wells during higher demand periods such as tourism season. The sources are shown to produce up to 220 acre feet per year with an average production of 170 acre feet per year. So our biggest well that we have right now, our largest well, I should say, is the one that's behind the cemetery. It has a 25 horsepower pump in there. We're capable of pumping, I think, 305 gallons a minute with a 25 horsepower pump. We run it at about 106 to 108 gallons a minute, just so we can keep it way below to where we're actually refilling our aquifer while we're pumping. The water from the spring was measured before any system use and reflects true spring production, whereas water from the wells is based on increased demand from the system and not the full capacity of the wells. Based on the last 5 years of spring flow data, Jepson Spring can produce on average 140.114 acre feet of water per year. The BKRE wells in Boulder Farmstead well capacities are based on the safe yield capacity of the well or 2/3 of the pump test rate and have a reliability capacity of 21.72 acre foot. and 107.53 acre foot of water per year, respectively. Garkane's well test pump rate couldn't be found readily, so the average production of the last 5 years was assumed to be a reliable source capacity, 33.85 acre foot per year. The table displays the reliable capacity for each source along the total reliable capacity for all sources. So all I'm saying is your existing source capacity is comparing to your maximum source capacity right now for your reliable source. The company reports water usage each year to the Division of Drinking Water, see Table 5. Company water users are not supplied by a secondary water source, and therefore the usage amounts in Table 5 shows indoor and outdoor water usage. Based on water usage from 2005 to 2020, the average water usage per capita per day is approximately 286 gallons, or about 0.321 acre feet per ERC per year. So then the water usage, this just goes back and shows you exactly how much water we've used from 2005 to 2020. And you can see there was one of them I saw, I think it's on the next graph where, yeah. We actually used a ton of water in 2010. I don't know why or what,
but I noticed.
It went above and beyond. So comparing water supply versus water usage, see figure 4, the company has enough water supply to provide water for the projected water demands through 2060. As it can be seen in the above figure, Boulder Farmstead has plenty of water and reliable source capacity to meet the current and future demands of the current water usage per capita. System water loss. The company has a water operator that makes regular checks on the system to check for leaks and areas in need of repair. Water users are also encouraged to report leaks to the company. If repairs are needed, the water operator has the equipment necessary to make the complete water line repairs. Water loss. The company records water from sources through meters. The main supply of water is through Jepson Spring, and the meter reading the flow is between the spring and the storage tanks. Because the nature of this configuration causes the tanks to overflow, any water loss from the overflow is not recorded, and thus for the system shows an artificially high water loss. We only usually hit overflow and we have water loss in the wintertime. We hardly ever hit overflow in the summertime. most of the water loss for the company is not a revenue loss, which this part right here is BS. I even told it. So our water loss is, or our water, when it actually goes into our overflow, we're already chlorine, we're treating it because it's already going into the tanks. Then once the tank's filled, then we lose the water out the overflow. So it's already being chlorined. So that little whole section right there is not even close to being right.
Will it be edited or is it just in there and stands?
They wrote it in there and then we told them to change it and they changed everything. And then when we looked back through it, I didn't even catch that one. And we told them, yeah, go ahead and print it.
Right on.
So yeah, the amount of loss that we lose is probably like $4 a year in chlorine after me and my dad figured it out. So, I mean, it's not, yeah. It's nothing that we're actually like going to break the bank on.
Thanks.
Water is allowed to overflow the tanks and keep the water fresh. And because of the nature of record keeping, the system shows a high water loss. All connections of the system are metered and are read manually every month as weather allows during the winter season. And if the meters are unreadable due to being buried in snow, water usage is assumed and then reconciled upon the next available manual reading. The system's meters were completely replaced in 2015 construction project with meters that are capable of being upgraded to radio read technology. Meters are replaced at the end of their service life or when the meter is damaged. The current price structure for users of Boulder Farmstead Culinary Water is shown below. So for 50,000 gallons, it's $48 a month. An additional $2 for every 1,000 gallons over the 50 up to 60,000. And then anything over 60,000, it's an additional $5 for every 1,000 gallons. The state is cracking down on every water company hard on their overages. They don't want, in fact, with us having 50,000 gallons a month per person, the state kind of laughs at us because that's more water than like 25,000 gallons, more water than anybody else gets in the state for the cheapest amount for the cheapest price. So water use, since 2015, water use for Boulder Farmstead has risen from about 233 GPCD to 330 GPCD. You can see right there on the graph that's right there below there, the gallons per capita per use per day. So in 2010, We were at 334. 2018, we're at 378, which I have no clue why we had those, or just we used a ton more water in those years. Part of the reason for the steady increase is the increase in commercial use. Olderton is a popular tourist location, and tourism has been increasing yearly. Because tourists aren't accounted for in the population calculations, the GPCD will artificially higher than the residential use. The other parts of the increased water use per resident are the several droughts the region has experienced since 2015. An average of the last 6 years of water use per capita is approximately 231 GPCD for residential use and 276 GPCD for total water use without the seasonal commercial water usage. Utah's regional municipal and industrial water conservation goal for Garfield County is 19% from 2015 to 2030, which equates to about 231 gallons GPCD. Currently, residents of the system are meeting the current goal of the average of 231 GPCD. However, institutional and commercial uses are the other major water demands of the company, and efforts can be made to bring the overall water usage down to meet the regional goal. For the previous water conservation plan, the company outlined several measures as goals to help promote conservation and help to solve problems identified with the system. Table 10 outlines each goal with an assessment of the progress made since the last water conservation plan. So these are the stuff that the state asked us to do. And we've got all of them except for the second one, which we're still just in the process doing. So the company will keep an accurate count of meter readings. This will aid the company in educating their users and their user usage and promote water conservation based on the type of amount of usage that's occurring. Encourage landscaping that requires little water. Educate users on conservation methods with their monthly statements. Keep water rates within the affordability guidelines for the state area by the State Division of Drinking Water. High rates will discourage users from keeping nice yards. Jepson Spring will be repaired and the collection system will be reconstructed in 2015, which is already done. An additional large diameter pipe will be placed parallel to the existing pipe throughout much of the service area 3 to help maintain adequate fire flows and pressure throughout the system, which is already completed. The Utah Division of Drinking, or the Division of Water Sources, has published a list of best management practices for water providers to help promote water conservation. This is our list of Table 11. These BMPSs will help water providers in conservation practices. Yeah, they're all pretty self-explanatory on just trying to make sure that we just need to start watching what you're doing with water. Like everybody in town, we have plenty of water right now, but who knows 5 years? I mean, we don't know. So this is the different stuff that the states actually want you to try to do is the comprehensive water conservation plans, universal metering, which means all of your secondary water, pressurized irrigation wells or pressurized irrigation systems, private wells, anything like that. They're coming down hard on everything. By 2025, the state of Utah wants all private wells to have meters on their private well. By 2030, they want all irrigation systems to have meters on their wells. Yes, water conservation ordinances, water conservation coordinator, public information program, system water, audits, leak detection and repair, large landscape conservation programs and incentives, water survey programs for residential customers, plumbing standards, school education programs, conservation programs for commercial, industrial, and institutional, reclaimed water use, and smart control technology. Because the company is privately owned and provides water to Boulder Town, conservation practices will be based on what the company can readily implement and practices that the company will work with Boulder Town to implement. Current conservation measurements include the following: encouraging water users to landscape that is native to the area that require little water, educating users of conservation methods, including appropriate times and amounts for irrigation, replacing old plumbing fixtures, maintaining systems integrity through regular system checks, maintain accurate water usage records. The current and potential future additional measures will be reviewed regularly by the board and may be implemented or revised as needed and determined by the board. Implementing and updating the water conservation plan. A periodically evaluation and review of the water management and conservation plan will occur as water meter readings provide the company with good consumptive use data. This will require field checks on users that are using large amounts of water to determine the cause of excess use. The users will need to be periodically informed of their usage and educated about appropriate conservation members. The company officers included the adoption and implementation of this plan are Connie Reed, President, Cindy Butcher, Board Member, Randy Cavill, Board Member, Camille Ballard, Board Member, and Yvonne Roundy, Secretary. Randy Cavill would be primarily responsible for ensuring these measures are put into place and that education takes place. The water management and conservation plan will be reviewed and updated if necessary every 5 years from the date of this adoption. And then it just goes into where the map of our stuff is. Any questions?
Thanks for sharing that, Jimmy.
You're welcome.
So we are past what they considered us to grow at. Is that what you're saying?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, they're just taking off of what our growth is from, I think it was 1980 or something like that. They just take it for the 1.67 growth and just that's how they averaged what they're supposed to be, which I think it might be a little bit higher just because the fact, but it's not showing it. Like it's not showing it from 1980 to now to 2020 when they did it. It was almost the exact same growth of so. So this and this is just for meter. This has no impact of what all the private wells, anything like that. This is just Boulder Farmsteads, their the water that we've obtained from the state, how much we're actually pumping, what our well site looks like, the water that's in the well, everything like that. That's where we get all the numbers from for here.
Jimmy, how much of this is being shared with all people that have hookups currently?
It's available through Boulder Farmstead. All they got to do is go ask Yvonne or my dad for it.
Okay. Is there like any summary or letter or notice for the people that might not even know to ask, or there's a way that we can let people know that it's available, or just
Yvonne
like
sending out, Yvonne's sending out a summary. Letter. Yvonne's sending out a letter in the next bill with awesome. A thing saying that if you'd like it, you can get the conservation plan from them.
Very cool. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Anybody got any questions? The fact that we're going to be required to have meters on our wells in the near future should be one thing that they talked about in the planning commission. So I'm not going to make a lot of people happy, but man, when you look at what's going on right now with our water and Lake Powell, and I mean, it's scary for us here. So
I honestly think we need to put it in our building permit that if you're putting in your own private well, that you need to put on a meter on there and turn in how much water you're supposed to be pulling out of your well and how much you actually pulled out to a yearly basis to the town. So you can actually see exactly how much people are actually pulling out of their wells, because I know there's not one person that has a private well that knows exactly how much water they're pulling out. Like, do you guys have a meter on yours?
Yeah.
So I know Colleen doesn't, you don't have a meter on yours. Like,
I don't think anybody would have a meter.
No, and so it makes it hard for
yeah.
to know exactly when you're only given 50 CFS for a whole entire year. How do you actually know that you're not pulling 200 CFS for the whole entire year?
I wonder if there's some way either like through a grant or partnering with the irrigation company to do something like a bulk order of meters so that way people can get them on their private wells. And so it might be easier if it's like, if you want one, order it through this, so that way we can get them in the community more easily. So
the state of Utah is actually going to put out a grant
okay.
for everybody to actually do this. And so what they'll do, and I was talking to Judy about this earlier, is more than likely they'll put the town in charge of the grant money for that. And then whoever has a private well will need to come in to the town, sign off on the town, saying, yes, I got my meter, it's going to be installed. So what I understood when we were down at the conference, that's why I missed last month's meeting, is I was down at the water conference, is they actually were going to come in, give us the grant for it. The individual person or business or whatever it is that has the well is actually going to be responsible for installing the meter. But the state of Utah is actually going to buy the meters because the meter's like $4,000 a piece.
Yeah, that's what I assumed.
Yeah, it's ridiculously stupid.
Well, thanks, and keep informing us as things come up. It's really great to know.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, and that's how serious everybody wants to get about their water.
And Jimmy, do you know if there's going to be much difference between people that are in town limits versus people that are just in the county but are still Boulder?
What do you mean the difference?
Like, is it the same money going to be available in the same resources for people that are out in Salt Gulch or the draw versus people that are within city limits?
It'll be all the same, because when they're coming out, most of the people's wells, they'll come out, even if you have an 8-inch well, when it comes up out of your ground, it usually comes to either an inch to or 3/4 to come in and feed whatever you're doing, unless you actually have it going out into like a sprinkler system or stuff like that. Then you're probably looking at like a 3 or 4 inch system. So most of the systems are all going to be the same. So it'll all be mostly the same meters, same equipment, everything like that.
Well, you can find out as we go along how they're going to determine that, you know. But it's really something we need to look at. I mean, at the end of last year, we really started with our well. We were making sure that we've got timers, and we're doing drip systems now when we didn't do that before. We basically either irrigated down the road, but we decided that it's that important, you know. I mean, all you have to do is look around and get fires, and I don't know, and where we are being in this area of the country, we really all need to be serious about it. And I think everybody pretty well is. I know a lot of people don't want to monitor their well, but if the state requires it and it helps, then I don't. And if you're not really using too much water, then you shouldn't have to worry about it. It just makes us responsible for what we're doing.
Yep.
Basically what it's doing. So anyway, all right, thanks for that, Jim. Next is the fire code, NFTA fire code. You want to grab and get a glass?
I got some right here. I brought it. I knew I was going to miss it. Okay. National Fire Protection Agency 1 Fire Code 2015 edition. The last time that the town actually adopted the fire code was in 96, which it's still all the same. It's just changed names as National Fire Agency then. Now it's just National Fire Protection Agency. So going over this stuff, for most of the stuff in here, like towards the back pages, it's all for bigger, like you got your theaters, motion picture theaters, television stage settings, or anything like that. Most of the stuff that applies to us is on the first two pages of this. In areas protected by automatic sprinkler, number two, the revised single dagger footnote. Let's see. The fire resistance rating is permitted but to be reduced by 1 hour, but in no case to less than 1 hour, where the building is protected throughout by an approved automatic sprinkler system in accordance with NFPA 13 and supervised in accordance with 13-3-1. The only two places that we have in town that have a sprinkler system is Gladys's, Annie's, and the church. Elizabeth, the school does not have a fire system, correct?
No, not a sprinkler, no.
So number three, in areas protected by automatic sprinkler, automatic heat detection devices required by other sections of this code should not be required. Carbon monoxide alarms or carbon monoxide detectors in accordance with those codes shall be provided a new one and two family dwellings where either of the following conditions exist. Dwelling units with communicating attached garages, unless otherwise exempted by 13-7-2, 13-2-3. Dwelling units containing fuel burning appliances or fuel burning fireplaces. And then number five, stairs and ramps that continue more than 1/2 story beyond the level of discharge shall be provided with approved means to prevent or dissuade occupants from traveling past the level of discharge during emergency building evacuation. So 6 and 7, these are the two that apply to us big time. 18-5-2, detached 1 and 2 family dwellings. Fire hydrants shall be provided for detached 1 and 2 family dwellings in accordance with both of the following. The maximum distance to a fire hydrant from the closest point on the building shall not exceed 600 feet. The maximum distance between fire hydrants shall not exceed 800 feet. So 7.18.5.3, building other than detached one and two family dwellings. Fire hydrants shall be provided for buildings other than detached one and two family dwellings in accordance with both of the following. The maximum distance to a fire hydrant from the closest point on the building shall not exceed 400 feet, and the maximum distance between fire hydrants shall not exceed 500 feet. So the first one is just your houses. The second one is your barns, that if you're going to be welding in them, if you're going to be working in there, if you got a shop, anything like that, that you're actually going to be doing any kind of work in there, you're grinding, anything like that. That shop is not supposed to be more than 400 feet or 500 feet or 400 feet from the farthest point of that thing, from the farthest point of the building. Flame retardant requirements. Combustible scenery of cloth, film, vegetation, and similar dry materials shall comply with one of the following. They shall meet the flame propagation performance criteria contained in the test one, method one, or test method two as appropriate of the NFPA or standard methods of fire test for flame propagation of textiles and films. They shall exhibit a heat release rate. This stuff doesn't apply to us. The foam plastic, which doesn't apply to us. We don't have scenery and stage properties. We could, that would be us if, say, like the lodge when they set up their stuff, or the town when they set up their stuff in the park, anything like that. The theater's not us. Projection rooms, not us. Mostly it was for, see, like wood grandstands. So most of the stuff that's everything else in here, this is just the whole entire code. But the stuff that I wanted to make sure that we actually got through there was the for the fire protection.
Okay, and we're going to abide. And, you know, being a town, we, and seeing what we've seen the last couple of years with a couple of fires in town, we really need to be on the ball and make sure that we're following fire code. In some cases, it may be extra money, but in the long run, I mean, if you're protecting your home and people, it's necessary. So we've got to make sure that we're following this fire code, period. We're going to, I'd like to put, Jimmy suggested that on our building inspections and stuff, was it the building inspection sheet, Jimmy, the application, that we want to put what's required, wasn't it? That's the one we got to change.
All we have to do is just adopt the new fire code because we've already got it. We just have to readopt it, and it, we don't even have to change anything in our building code or building permits because it'll automatically.
No, I was just talking about the applications to specify certain things on the applications.
Yeah, we could put it on there for the
checklist. All right. Well, we'll talk about that. We'll get the application and talk about that. But we wanted to bring this up today and make sure everybody was on board with it because.
Judy, I think that's an excellent idea of just having it clearly stated, at least pulling out the pieces that really apply so that way there's just, it's as clear as can be for people when they're getting their, completing the application that they just see what the requirements are, even though it should be a given that you have to reference it, right? But the simpler we make it for people, the more likely it'll, the compliance will come.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, I'm a one-on-one person. People should be able to go in and read and see what they can, what they have to do before they even start building, you know?
Yep.
It should just be simple. So that is one thing that we definitely will address. And thanks for that, Jim. Training for this, is there, what training is there that...
They have training all the time for like at the different fire schools. When like fire school, we go down there, they have classes that you can take for different stuff. Most of all this is just, every bit of it's just all online. Like, I don't know what kind of training you need. You just have to find them.
I have a physical copy of the International Fire Code.
Okay. All right.
So I make a motion that we adopt the National Fire Protection's ABC code, new fire code.
Okay, do I have a second?
A second.
Okay, all in favor?
Okay, just a question. So okay. You're saying we adopt you.
This is the actual fire code for.
So we want to adopt the updated ones. What
yes,
you're saying,
we're just all we're doing. Yeah, we're just updating because we already adopted it. We're just updating it and making sure that we have all the new rules, laws, regulations.
Okay. So I have a motion and second. All in favor?
Gladys, yes.
Steve, yes.
Jim, yes.
Judy, yes.
Elizabeth, yes.
All right. Motion carried, 5-0.
Last one.
Okay. Cross connections.
All right. So cross connection, this is going to apply to pretty much anybody in town. And even if you have a private well, this would be a really good thing for you to actually think about. Cross connection is just it's a connection that you can actually have cross contamination that can happen into your well system or into your water system. So I'll read this though. Policy related to cross connection control and backflow prevention control at the Utah Public Water System, Part one, cross connection control and backflow prevention. In accordance with the Utah Division of Drinking Water, Rule Section 309-105-12, it shall be against the policy adopted herewith by the owner of the four stated business operating a public drinking water system and determined by the Utah DDW to allow any connection supplied with water from the potable water supply to the distribution system of any of the following. A, to install or to use physical connection or arrangements of piping or fixtures which may allow any fluid or substances unsuitable for human consumption to enter the potable water distribution system as per the currently adopted plumbing code of the state of Utah. Any employee, agent, or owner or owners to install or cause to have installed any connection, arrangement, or fixtures without a backflow prevention device or approved assembly unless arranged otherwise by the owner or authorized representative of the owner. To incorrectly install, cause, or allow to be incorrectly installed any backflow prevention device or assembly required by the currently adopted plumbing code and amendments of the state of Utah. Any person found in violation of this policy shall be subject to reprimand or other appropriate disciplinary actions as determined by the owner or duly authorized representative. Administration of this policy shall be in accordance with the most recently approved cross-connection control program of Utah. A copy of the manual may be viewed and or downloaded from the state of Utah drinking water website at drinkingwater.utah.gov. Backflow prevention assemblies, as required by code, will be required to be tested at least annually. The owner or duly authorized agent of the owner shall prepare and maintain a backflow assembly information sheet on all such devices, and test results shall be maintained for a period of no less than 5 years. The policy shall take effect on blank, blank, blank. A copy of the policy shall be placed in the office of the aforementioned business and be reviewed for the new construction projects, additions, or appearances to the water system before installation. So R309-105-12, cross connection control. The water supplier shall not allow a connection to his system which may jeopardize its quality and integrity. Cross connections are not allowed unless controlled by an approved and properly operated backflow prevention assembly or device. The requirements of this International Plumbing Code and its amendments as adopted by the Department of Commerce shall be met with respect to cross-connection control and backflow prevention. Each water system shall have a functioning cross-connection control program. The program shall consist of 5 designated elements documented on an annual basis. The elements are A, a legally adopted and functional local authority to enforce a cross-connection control program. B, providing public education or awareness materials or presentations. C, an individual with adequate training in the area of cross-connection control or backflow prevention. Community water systems serving a population of 500 or greater shall have a certified cross-connection control program administrator by December 31st, 2020. Community water systems serving as a population less than 500 shall have a certified cross-connection control program administrator by December 31st, 2022. Non-transient, non-community, and transient non-community water systems may be required to have a certified cross-connection control program administrator at the director's discretion. Written records of cross-connection control activities such as backflow assemblies, inventory, and test history and documentation of ongoing enforcement, hazard assessments, and enforcement actions and activities. Suppliers shall maintain as proper documentation and inventory of each pressure atmospheric vacuum breaker, spill-resistant pressure vacuum breaker, double-check vacuum, double-check valve, reduced pressure zone principal assembly, a high-hazard air gap used by their customers, and a service record for each such assemblies. Backflow prevention assemblies shall be inline serviceable and inline testable and have approved through third-party approval agencies to be used within a public drinking water system. The third-party approval shall consist of any of the combined of the two approvals, laboratory or field performed by a recognized testing organization which has demonstrated competency to perform such tests. Backflow prevention assemblies shall be inspected and tested at least once a year by an individual certified for such work as specified in R309-305. Suppliers shall maintain as proper documentation records of these inspections. This testing responsibility may be borne by the water system, or the water system management may require the customer having the backflow prevention assembly be responsible for having the assembly tested. Supplier servicing areas also served by pressurized irrigation systems shall prevent cross-connection between the two. Requirements for pressurized irrigation systems are outlined in section 19-4-12 that you talk about. So what this is, if you have, say, like Judy Drain, she has her well and she has Boulder Farmstead water. Both of those waters are coming into her house at one time. There, she needs to actually go in and put in a swing valve so where she cannot have the water from the well and Boulder Farmstead going into the house at the same time, because if we broke a line down lower, we could actually suck her well dry from the amount of water that we're sucking out of the Boulder Farmstead if we broke a pipe. So it's saying that, or like your cattle troughs, anybody that puts their hose inside a cattle trough just throws it in there and turns it on, waits for it to fill up. Illegal now. They can't do it. You have to have an air gap in it. They don't want any kind of backflow prevent. No way, no how, anyway. Automatic sprinkler systems, if you have them in your yard, the pressurized ones that pop up in the thing, you have to have a backflow preventer on those just in case. Because say your house line breaks inside your house and you have the water out on your grass. Well, once those lines pop up and then the sprinkler heads pop back down, all that water puddles right on top of that sprinkler head. So if you have a line break inside your house, you're going to suck all the fertilizer and dog and everything else that's on your lawn back into your house. And so in any of the sprinkler systems, anything like that that are going in, there has to be a backflow preventer on them. Let's see, there's tons, like, yeah, let's see, there's any way possible. If there's a way possible for you to contaminate, it can't be. Like, they just, so anything that, any new construction, they're going to, and this is all by international plumbing code, any new construction, they have to have a bladder tank or a discharge tank right outside of their fire or their hot water heater. They have to have a bladder tank there with a dual check valve on the outside, because they're finding out the hot water heaters are one of the main contaminants for hot water for houses. When the hot water heater starts to heat up and it plugs off your blow off valve with all of our hard water, when it plugs that off and it has nowhere else to go, it pushes all of the all the stuff from inside your line back into your house water lines. And so if there's no check valve on there, that can just push it straight through. So any of the stuff, like, I have a whole list of people that I have to go talk to for all the cross-connection stuff. Is there any questions on the cross-connection?
So, Jimmy, if you're with the Farmstead, though, the Farmstead, don't they put something on there so you can't?
Yes, so we have a dual check on our meters, which okay. Those are only efficient like 80% of the time after 7 to 10 years. The state's requiring us to start replacing 10% of those a year after 5 years in service. They've been in year service for 7 years now. So, because I've even seen them, like, we were working on Farland's place down there. That dual check was stuck open. So as soon as I pulled the meter off, we drained all of the water from his house, his pool, or his water tank, everything right there. We drained it all the way back out and stuck in, and came and filled my hole up when I pulled the meter off just to replace the meter, because it was stuck open. So those aren't guaranteed. That's why any of the stuff, like any of your sprinkler systems, If you have your hose, like I said, if you're watering your cows, anything like that, they want you to buy a hose vacuum brake. So you actually put it on there to where the water can't suck back into your hydrant. Because even with a frost-free hydrant, frost-free is a great example of doing it. If you've ever left your hose inside a water tank and then turn it off, and that hydrant will suck all your water completely out of your water trough or whatever and suck it down in the ground and leak it out the spit hole in the bottom. That's backflow.
Okay.
So we're just trying to prevent any kind of stuff like that. And anything like for your private wells, if you guys have it going out to like your, if you have a line that running out to like your irrigation or to livestock or anything like that, if it's separating anyway, I would suggest putting a dual check valve on it, just for your own protection, for your own safety. Doesn't matter to me if you do it or not, it's your well. But I'm just telling you, like, it would be smart to do it. If you have any other ways or any other where it forks off to anything else, I would actually try to protect yourself. It's your water.
So what do those valves usually run?
About $75 to $80.
Okay.
So I make a motion that we adopt the new, well, the updated version of the International Plumbing Code, the IPC, because that covers all of the cross connection in it. We've already adopted the plumbing code anyway, so we're just, like we did the fire code, we're just adopting the newer version of it.
Okay.
And so you're saying what you're making a motion for is something larger than what you just read is a part of?
Yeah, it's part of the whole entire International Plumbing Code. This is just the newest part.
What part of that do we already have that we've adopted, or are you saying that we don't
adopted the whole entire plumbing code? This is just the newest part of, I don't think, what we have adopted.
And that's the cross
connection. That's the cross connection control policy.
And sorry, I didn't hear what you said because it got muffled, but we already have adopted what?
The International Plumbing Code.
Okay, so that we've done and we just haven't updated it since this was added.
Correct. This cross-connection control policy, it just came out 2 years ago from the state of Utah. They're actually making everybody do this. So this isn't even like a request from the state. This is like another one of those state code things where this is mandatory.
Okay. Any more questions? Did we get a second on that, Jim?
No, sorry. I shouldn't have asked questions until you had. Sorry.
No, you're good.
Last second.
Okay, we have a second on it. All in favor?
Gladys, yes.
Steve, yes.
Jim, yes.
Judy, yes.
Elizabeth, yes.
Okay, motion carried, 5-0. Okay. All right, the emergency operation plan. I sent everybody a list of the new, I talked with Judith on the phone quite a while last night. She's online with us, so I'm going to let her speak in just a few minutes and address some stuff. So last night, this is going to be one of those things that is going to be, like she said, one step at a time. But I believe this is absolutely mandatory. People know what to do, need to know what to do in an emergency, any kind of an emergency. The thing that I thought was very interesting on the list that they gave, the fire wasn't on the list. And for us, it's number one where we're at. So anyway, so we decided tonight that we would make appointments for each council member. And the thing about this is she was talking where we have a turnover every 2 years of council members, usually somebody, that it was recommended that we don't put the names, that we just put the number of the council member and we will know who we are and who's in charge of what. And that's probably a good idea.
And that's what the one that's on the codified version on the, like if you go to the codified version, Judy, that's what is currently there. It's not individual names, it's roles.
Yeah. And the thing about putting names in it, we have to have a public meeting and adopt it every time we change it. So this way we don't have to do that. And if we just, if we try our best to make sure that council member two has the same job each time as best possible, then we don't have to worry about it. We can leave it in the codified ordinances as such. So here's what I come up with. And Judy and I kind of talked this over, Judith, and this is kind of what the worksheet, did everybody got it in front of them? And then one of the things that I noticed in there that I really liked was when we have an emergency, those that aren't, say somebody's not as busy or doing something else, then we just, we all kick in and do what we have to do, no matter what. But she has some really, really good ideas on us as a community and getting together as groups, and so that we make sure everybody in this town and the community around us knows what we do in an emergency. I'm going to go through our chain of command first. So I have, I've got phone numbers next to all of them. I would like some input. I think this will work out pretty good. Fire Chief Corey Johnson, of course. Mayor Pro Tem is Jimmy Catmull, and council member number one, we have to address the council member to that. I have the water, sewer, wildfire, fire council, and then water supervisor is his dad, Randy.
So the best member for that is Hassell. You want to answer that one?
Oh, is that right? Yep. So let me have that down.
So it's 616-7446.
So Judy, which one are you looking at? You're not looking at the one that's the most updated on the town's website.
I sent you one, Elizabeth. Didn't you get it?
No, I think this is the one that I replied that there was no attachment.
Oh, crumb. Well, I'll read it to you and then get it to you. Is that okay?
Yep, that works. Okay, it's different than the one that is up on the website currently, correct?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
So this is with us, the new council, okay?
Okay.
So I've got Jimmy down as water, sewer, wildfire, fire council, and then Randy down as a water supervisor, his dad. Council member number two, Gladys Lefevre, organization of religious groups and businesses. I've got you down for schools, Elizabeth, as council member number three, EMS, search and rescue. And then council member number four, Steve Johnson, roads and streets and public buildings. And then we have office financial clerk, Judith Davis down. So right now that's what we're going with. And unless you guys have any better ideas, we kind of talked it out last night, kind of wanted to try and make it a little bit even. And it's hard to, I mean, to me, it kind of looks like it should roll. Anybody, any comments? Go ahead, Elizabeth.
I know it's a little bit different, but is Jimmy not in charge of fire?
No, this is just for the emergency chain of command. If we have a major, So okay. I'll still have wildfire.
Wouldn't it make more sense for you to be the point person on that, or no?
Yeah.
Well, if you want to do that, we can.
It's all the same for...
All right.
And because you have access to radio and two-way communication with them and I don't. Right?
Okay.
I'm fine doing it, and it would just be double power of making sure we both, but and then will you repeat what else you said I was responsible for?
Just in charge of the school then.
Oh, because you're keeping fire, search and rescue, EMS. Okay, and then. Okay.
All right, we'll straighten that out. No problem. So you got any, anything?
The phone number else? After Judy's name. That's my phone number.
Oh, I meant to take that out. Sorry. Just pretend it was a. One gray hair moment, and that's all I'm confessing to.
And what telephone number do you have for me?
Elizabeth, I got 7475335. Is that correct?
Yep, that's my home number.
Okay. And then I just got religious groups and businesses with Gladys.
Okay, and so that used to be the school. They were previously linked with the schools. Okay, I think I'm following what you're switching.
And then I've got roads, streets, and public buildings with Steve Johnson. So if you want to wiggle it around, and probably on the water and stuff, even, I mean, if we had something like that, Jimmy, or Dad would probably be doing most of it anyway, because you'd be busy doing the other stuff. But the bottom line is still that they'd work together. So that's the bottom line on it. Judith, have you got some input that you would like to input right now? I want to address this every meeting a little bit. I want us to go forward on this every town council for a while till we.
Yeah, here I am. A chairperson for the Wildfire Council, I feel that our membership has a certain responsibility towards this emergency operation plan, simply because, as you stated earlier, Judy, wildfire is our greatest hazard. So I want to be involved in proceeding with the actual plan. Now, I really appreciate you and the council looking at the chain of command and taking on that responsibility. But what we don't have is an actual plan towards notification and if possible mandated evacuation. We have none of that in place. So that's one of the steps that we need to work towards. And having adequate conductivity is really important. Having the personal phone connections is important. Having a notification protocol is very important. And that's just one piece. There's a million of other pieces, but I really think that one of the major ones is beginning work on actually how to respond to emergency. One thing that I was thinking about that I'd like the council to consider is maybe starting with neighborhoods and finding individuals within each of those neighborhoods that maybe would be willing to take on the leadership role to notify other residents within their little circle of responsibility, and working with them to plan such things as protecting individual properties, planning an evacuation route, planning to deal with individuals that maybe not have access to transportation, alternate routes. There's a lot of needs there, but it's very difficult to look at the bigger community. And we are big because we're so graphically dispersed. So we are big in that sense. And we have major issues with mapping and addressing. And so I was thinking that maybe looking at individual groupings around neighborhoods, around particular streets, whether it's the Gulch, whether it's the our road at 450 West, whether it's Lower Boulder Road. Is there a way that we could just subdivide the larger community into smaller ones and then get those small neighborhood leaders together to do some wider community planning?
Okay.
Any comments or?
No, I think that sounds like a good idea. The more we have involved, the better we're going to be with this. We're all spread out like we are, you know.
Yeah, and I would be willing as chair of the Wildfire Council to begin working on that.
Awesome.
I would suggest, instead of just completely starting over, to reach out to the people there. There was a pretty successful phone tree that was created 2 years ago for a different purpose in the community, and to kind of use that as a template almost.
Yes, I certainly agree that the phone tree is very, very important, but there are a lot of issues from each of our little regional areas that really are quite diverse.
Yeah. No, so, I agree. I just meant to use it to support this.
Yes, absolutely.
I see that there's a difference for sure.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Using a phone tree.
Okay.
There are lots of other issues on this plan, and it's not just this plan. It's our urban interface plan. It's our FEMA plan, which is the Natural Hazard Mitigation Plan. We have signed off on both of those documents, as Elizabeth knows, and we need to be complying with those guidelines too. So there's a lot of work to do, but I think if we can begin with just looking at a possible evacuation plan as one avenue, and then there are the issues of fire mitigation projects, et cetera. But I just wanted to face the council today to see what their positions are and how strongly they feel about the chain of command, because it really, in a really tough situation, might be a life and death situation for some of our town members.
I agree. You know, it's funny because I was sitting there today as I was thinking about this, and I thought, what, I mean, say we had something today, you know, we need to know what to do. And I don't think we'd be in really, really good shape. I mean, we might, the fire department's probably the one that would be doing most of the stuff and get notifying most of the people, but as a community, we need to all be we need to all be involved in this, because that really is a matter of life and death.
Yeah.
So we will get busy on this. We will start on a plan for notification and evacuation first. But I advise everybody to get online and read that emergency plan. This whole town and the surrounding areas need to read that. And we need to really take this serious. As much as this community comes together, I don't think this will be a challenge. I think it's just a matter of time and input and people putting their heads together and figuring a few things out. Other stuff will have to, of course, go by all the different divisions that we have to comply with, county and NIMS and.
Yeah. Could I ask informally if our council people are comfortable or accepting of the position of being in a chain of command? That really implies leadership and responsibility. And sitting here quietly, it's certainly not an issue, but at a time of real crisis, their participation and commitment would be absolutely critical.
I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, me neither.
I'm good.
Okay. All right, Judah, thank you.
Certainly, thank you.
We're going to go forward with this. And
Judah, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, the batch application.
I don't have one.
You don't?
Nope.
Oh, well, I didn't pass out the batch application. Sorry. I was just going to tell you about it. So I got a hold of Tina, and Tina, I couldn't find, I went back, I didn't go back too far, but I did find where we talked about the benches. And I am like, I bet I'm 80% sure we passed that bend up the benches, right?
I thought we did.
Yeah. So now all we basically need to do is get the, we'll get that up. Peg said that she's got both, and she'll make sure that gets up on the website. And that's just putting the application and then the map up on the website for the benches. And so she's going to do that for us. So, okay. Anybody questions on that? There's the map. Isn't that cool?
Can I make a suggestion? And with it, I'm willing to do it before you post it, Peg. Can I make it a fillable application? Take the PDF that's current, because it's already been posted on tonight's agenda. But if I take that and turn it into a fillable PDF and then send it back, Peg, will you post that version so people can fill it out online if they want to, instead of printing it? And
yes, that would be great.
I will do that.
And it is on the website right now. As soon as you send me that, I'll replace it.
I'm happy to turn it into a fillable PDF and then forward it to you.
Okay.
Cool.
Is that okay with everyone else?
Yeah. Good idea. That was Elizabeth. Uh-huh. Okay. All right. If you don't have any questions on that, we're going to move along to the department report. I'm going to start. Gladys, do you have anything?
If anybody wants to travel council, 2021 review, just the statistical facts. I don't think I have anything about the town building. Working on getting the updates on the cemetery.
Okay. You want to do anything about getting that gate, that new gate at the cemetery?
Yes, I just haven't got it.
You're preaching to the choir.
You've been adulting.
Okay. Very good. Steve?
I requested that Tina call a meeting of the park committee, which she did. I didn't attend. I did not check my email in a timely manner, so I didn't attend. But they met, and just thankful for the work you're doing. And
nothing.
So I guess, I don't know how frequently you meet.
Actually, I think it's a lot to do with whatever comes up in the town that we need to review as far as the park.
All right.
So we're a recommending body, so
okay.
And then we can recommend things that we think need to happen, and okay. You definitely will hear.
All right. Well, then we stay in touch then. Yeah. Thank you for your work.
Yeah.
And again, I'm sorry for the meeting.
So. It happens.
You cover everything, Jim?
We had, for the fire department, we had the Lower Boulder burn, which turned out awesome for everybody that helped. Then we had our two fires, both the one house with Stacy's. The money for the extrication equipment, pagers, radios. Dwight's is probably going to come over and try to get the metal in the middle of June or July out of the dump. The county came and cleared all the mattress pile yesterday. And they also took all of the metal and stacked it all up. Dean had to make like a giant tower, if he was explaining it to me right, which I hope it's not just like a 40-foot tower of metal. But yeah, it's all cleaned up. And I think that's it.
Okay, we still got to get that dumpster moved off the...
He didn't move it? I asked him to move it.
No, it's still not moved.
I'll ask him again.
I usually used to catch him in the morning when I worked mornings, and I could tell him, but I'm all afternoons now, so I... Anyway, we'll get that done.
Is that something we can just have Dave to do? Have him tell him? Dogs?
Yeah. You want to shoot him an email?
Yeah.
Just tell him he's got to move.
Yep.
All right. Elizabeth?
Let's see. Library. The library hours continue to be Saturday, 11 to 1. They're going to continue. They still have two PCs and a printer available to all visitors, and they wanted to let people know that they have new books and audiobook donations and that everyone is welcome, including short-term Boulderites. Let's see, they said that the book drop outside is still available, and it's been helpful, and that they plan on going to the farmer's market, at least in the beginning of the year, to sell remaining t-shirts and caps and totes to try to raise some money for library supplies. Boulder Arts Council has quite a few events planned from April through next fall, and I know that some of them have been posted on Pegboard and so on, but they've got right now Poetry Month happening. There's a Humanities in the Wild stargazing event coming up. Pam Furches is doing a Inkle Loom workshop that's being sponsored by the Arts Council. Right now, The Art at Home is out for those of you that are there. And then they've got lots more coming up in May. Planning Commission, they've got a lot going on, but the highlights from March were the vested rights ordinance hearing to comply with Utah state requirements. And that the vote on that was tabled, and it sounds like it's going to be tabled again this month, but I'm not totally sure. The Peg and other, I think Colleen's there and Tina's there, they might have a better update on that. They're continuing, the PC being they, are working with Lee Ellis on the vested rights ordinance and also to review the subdivision ordinance needed revisions and how best to proceed moving forward. They had a hearing on a new RSTR and a new CUP application, which was voted on and accepted. There was a renewal of a RSTR CUP, and that was the big highlights from last month's meeting. And they're seemingly to be having a very full meeting coming up in April next Thursday.
Okay, good. I don't have much. I didn't make it to the Planning Commission meeting last month. They moved it up a week, and I was busy with Boulder stuff, so I didn't get to go. And then I told you about the booster for the firehouse. The Tree City, I didn't get back to her. I didn't get back to her the other day. But I did see them out doing trees. That was really cool. And then I think they had one Saturday. Did anybody go to this last Saturday? I think it was the 26th. I think it was.
Pruning thing?
For the pruning thing.
Yeah.
Wasn't that Saturday? Did you go to that one? How did it turn out?
It was good.
Yeah.
It was really good. The DNR guy from Cedar came, and he's great.
Very informative. All right. Well,
we're trying to turn a
little late. We wanted to make it. It's just been a crazy year. So, all right. Okay. I was going to say, Judy, have you got something as a clerk? Do you have anything? Okay. Well, I'm thinking that's about all we have there. So, let's go to the checks and approve the checks. The printer's working. I got the scanner. I called the guy. We're in good shape in the office. Peg put the new computer in, and we didn't realize we had to reconnect it to the printer last month. So that was the hang up. But it's working now. All right. So let's go. All right. So January. January checks. Anybody got any questions on January checks?
Make a motion we accept January checks.
Okay.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Lottis, yes.
Steve, yes.
Jim, yes.
Judy, yes.
Elizabeth, yes.
Okay. February checks. Any questions on that?
Nope.
All right. Somebody want to make a motion?
I make the motion. We approve February checks.
Okay. All in favor?
Gladys, yes.
Steve, yes.
Jim, yes.
Judy, yes.
Elizabeth, yes.
All right. They're passed. March checks.
No, sir. No. Paychecks at the bottom.
Yeah, that'll be at the, yeah, the.
Oh, for March.
Yeah, it'll be on April, so.
All right.
So does, is that Garcane Energy, is that kind of what it usually is, Judy? Yeah. Okay, just because it's winter months and, yeah.
Okay, but on one of these, I called, and it is that one, and I was, when I saw that, I was like, holy cow. And I called and talked to the girl, and there was something paid twice, so we're going to get a refund, and it's like a $500 refund. A credit. Yeah, not a refund. Pardon me, a credit. They'll credit us
$500.
Oh, okay. Okay. And it is on that one, I believe. On that.
Yeah, it was the February one.
Oh, she just got the bill, and there is a credit, she said. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Judy. All right, anything else? We good?
I make a motion that we accept March's checks.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Gladys, yes.
Steve, yes.
Jim, yes.
Judy, yes.
Elizabeth, yes.
All right, motion carried. 5-0 on the check. We got those taken. I'm so glad those are out of the way. We'd had it last month if the printer hadn't outsmarted us. So. Oh, I'm saying about that.
So now I can make a motion that we leave our public meeting and go into public comment.
Wait, yes. Just a minute.
Oh, go ahead, Sandra.
What did we decide to do about those speed bumps over by the Element Crystal? I'm still driving around by the church. I'm right. Sorry, that's really rough on.
Well, and Jay, the first time that Jay came around with the thing, he ripped him right out of the ground. He called me up and chewed me out for it.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't heard anything else.
I haven't had snow again.
I know, but I mean, we all decided to put them in. So
they're just kind of bigger than what.
That is an issue. I agree. That is an issue. But
Corey found a starter bolt in front of one of them the other day. It fell out of somebody's car. I know it's a starter bolt for a fact. So somebody's missing the starter bolt out of their car.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. We put it in there for safety. So I feel like they should stay. We went to a lot of trouble with those speed bumps. And yes, they should be the smoother ones. I do grant you that. But they said they couldn't get them. And that's all they could get. So that's what we're living with. So sorry, Gladys.
I'll keep driving.
You and a few other people.
Yeah, I'm not the only one.
No, you notice how there's tire tracks going around the speed bumps now?
That's really rough on livestock, trailers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Next is public comments.
So I make a motion to leave public or the our meeting, our public meeting, and go into public comment.
No, it doesn't. Only, no,
you, I don't think you need, it's not a public hearing, it's just public comment.
Right, yeah, only on a hearing.
Okay.
On a public hearing. Okay, so we're open for public comment. And you'll have to let us know up there. Anybody here? Anybody in the room have any public comments? Okay. Sounds like we're good in this side.
Peg, I noticed one of your comments on the thing was the pagers were paid for by the grant. It's the radios that are paid for by the grant.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, Tessa was wanting to know because she's writing up the little article on that. So I wasn't sure. I kind of was doing something else when you were describing that cost.
Okay, cool.
Pagers and radios, so.
Yeah, the pagers were given to us, and we bought the radios with our license plate grant.
Okay.
Tessa, any little hands up?
I think. I don't
hold on.
I figured out how.
Yeah, I think Tessa does want to say something. So, Tess, if you unmute and
Sure, thank you. I wanted to thank Jimmy for all the info that he provided about the water company. That was super helpful. I think in addition to that, at the Planning Commission meetings a couple months ago, they were also talking about more on the aquifer and like the total capacity that the town could have in regards to private wells. And I know you guys talked today about meters, but I'm curious, or I just don't want it to be forgotten that it is a bigger issue with the private wells and that this is one of the only areas where anyone can still get a water right for a well. And I don't even know if the town has a say in that, because I know that's a state thing, but it seems important that that conversation not be dropped, even though we have all this great information that refers to the town water and not private wells. So I'm just curious how that conversation can continue in the future to make sure that we have enough water.
So the only way that we're actually going to be able to
many years to come
there is if we get meters on all private wells. That's the only way you're actually going to be get an accurate reading of your aquifers underneath there. Any other way that you try to do that, there's no way, because you can't tell how much people are actually sucking out of the ground. So you could have one study that says we have plenty of water on this, but if you have 25 wells and they're all sucking way more than what they're supposed to be out of there, your aquifer is not going to last. And plus, right. Plus all the different private wells, most of them are anywhere between 250 to say 350, maybe 400 feet deep. So they're in a whole different aquifer than say Boulder Farmstead. We're at 1580 feet at one of our wells and 700 feet for our other well. So it's totally two different aquifers that we're looking into, but at the same time, like I said, the only way you're going to get a precise reading on anything for your underground aquifer or anything like that is if everybody starts putting meters on their wells.
Yeah. I think the meters will be super important, but I'm not sure how that also answers the question of like capacity. Do you know what I'm saying? Like all that we can find out, that's the first step, finding out how much water people are actually using, but how much water do we actually have and how much can actually be used? And you know more about this than I do, Jimmy, so maybe my question doesn't even relate to what you're saying. But anyway.
I get what you're saying. It's hard when you have, like I said, all the individual different holes in the ground, because more holes you start popping in the ground, you have more contamination points for your water, you have different anything. I mean, you could have one awesome aquifer and somebody drills the wrong well through it, and all of a sudden you have natural gas or something else inside your water. I mean, it just depends on where they're drilling, who's drilling it, how deep they're going, what they want to do with the water, how much water they're even allocated from the state. So, I mean, it's hard to, and I know what you're saying, we need to get an actual, like, gallons of what's underneath this, but that is so hard without actually trying to take care of all the other little tiny stuff to see what we're actually pulling out of the ground, because you can find out what's in our well. Like when we just dropped a measure in our well up here, the wellhead itself, or our well pump, sits at 165 feet below the water level. And we've only dropped the water level in the past 25 years, we've dropped it 5 feet. So
how do they do the aquifers? Because who was the gentleman? Cascade Water, is that who he was from that night that he, wasn't that, John, were you listening to that?
Yeah.
Cascade Water, and it's on the Planning Commission
right.
Recording. I'm going to go and listen to that again, because he talked about aquifers and it, how much it had dropped in 30 years, the main aquifer that's used here. I think that's what he said.
Yeah, no, that was John Fields. I believe he's also, now did his information get into the Jones and Mill report?
No, this is just Boulder Farmstead's information.
Right. Okay, just for my curiosity then, first I think with the report you gave, which is a great job, Jones and Mill, is the electronic copy available from Yvonne?
Yes.
Okay. And the other, what was the other study you referred to that had been done by John Fields? He was referring to previous work he'd done in this area.
I'm not sure what the other work was. We had all we've done for our work for is just like redo our spring. We had to redrill our new well because the old well that they had in there, when they went in there, they capped off the bottom of it. Right. And so you couldn't actually scrub your well out because it was capped, so you couldn't send scrubbers down there. So we had to actually abandon that whole entire well and drill a new well. But I'm not sure what the other study is that...
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about whether the gravels weren't saturated, that all the water was in the sand source of that. It seems he does been involved with some study, but I've never been able to track down a copy of it.
Well, if you find it, will you send it to me?
We'll do.
All right. Well, if we don't have any more public comments.
I have a comment, but it's not necessarily a public comment, but I just have a comment just to see if we can put out there either as a discussion point for next month or I was curious if there's a way to do like a folder for each month that all of the documents that get shared can go into. And I know last month at the Planning Commission, they decided to make sure that all shared documents were posted at least they chose a week before the meeting. But it's really challenging when things, and I know Judy, you've done an awesome job of getting everything out and sent, but it's still, you know, less than 24 hours or, you know, a lot coming in. And I'd like to be prepared. And I know a lot of the things that Jimmy went over today that we passed were pretty straightforward in adapting things from the state. But it's really hard to be prepared for the meetings when this much information's coming in this close to the meeting, especially when I don't have the ability during the day to be checking email and reading things. And so if there was a way that we could have like a shared file folder that as things are ready, they just get dropped in and then, you know, we can look at it and we know, so they're all in one place. I just feel like there has to be an easier way for us to have material ahead of time and so that we're properly prepared for the meetings.
Yeah, you're right.
And I don't necessarily think we need to solve it tonight, but I do think that we need to really think about it and make a conscious effort to get information that we're bringing for an agenda item that's going to be discussed and potentially have a passed motion on, that we have that opportunity.
Yeah, I agree. We will get better at that, all of us. Okay. And I will make sure we get that out. I really tried to get most of it out early, but sometimes things filter, and hopefully we can get better at this.
No, and Judy, like I said, I think this was one of the best months, and you are doing an excellent job, and I definitely noticed your effort, so thank you.
Thank you. All right, well, if that's it, I make a motion. We adjourn.
I second
that. All in favor?
Who seconded it? Gladys, yes.
Steve, yes.
Jim, yes.
Judy, yes.
Elizabeth, yes.
We are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
You need help here in that Pavlov County.